college football talk like you've never heard before.
The pinky finger goes up the nose. Ugh.
From the tailgates.
He is a terrible tipper and a terrible human.
To the touchdowns.
He's going for the corner. He's got it.
We have everything covered.
Place at the table.
Here are your hosts, Patrick Maher and Andy Staples.
Hit Squad is in the house.
Place at the Table podcast. Andy Staples, Patrick Maher, welcome to the show. Week 4 college football, we looked for answers, and I think, Andy Staples, we found more questions.
Oh, I guarantee you we did. So many more questions.
Stillwaters run rough for the Cowboys. Saquon and Trey shine late under the lights in Iowa City. The Bulldogs in Athens answer questions that we had before the season, but it looks like they're heading towards the playoffs and they joined the discussion. But while game day, Andy, was in Times Square, I was there all day. This was one of the most exciting Saturdays we've had in a long time.
This is what happens. Every time you think a weekend's going to be a dog, that's when they're great, because that's when teams don't get up the way they should for their opponents, like Oklahoma and Baylor yesterday. Okay, Oklahoma probably looked at Baylor, said, oh, these guys lost to Liberty, they lost to UT San Antonio, we should be able to roll these dudes, and then they go out and score 21 points on their first 7 plays, so shouldn't be a problem, right? And then all of a sudden it's 49-41 and Baylor's just got an onside kick, and it's like, oh good lord.
Yeah.
What have we gotten ourselves into?
No, it was crazy, and we're going to do What's Good with Staples, by the way. Also, Staples is going to take you around the Big Ten with his stadium and city breakdown. But let's start with one of the early games. We did have questions after Francois went down. Was Florida State going to be a part of the conversation? 0-2 for the first time since, what, 89?
Yeah, and here's the stat line of the week, or the scheduling line of the week. 0-2 Florida State will play 4-0 Wake Forest on Saturday.
They've got a good coach, right? Wake Forest?
Dave Clawson is excellent. It's taken him a long time to overcome the stigma of the 2008 offensive coordinator stint at Tennessee, which went very poorly. Phillip Fulmer got fired after that season, and he had to kind of work his way back, and he was the head coach at Bowling Green, and he's done a good job at Wake Forest. And look, they are going to probably go to a bowl game again this year. At Wake Forest, that's about the best you can hope for.
And by the way, also that buyout life coming up on Place at the Table. You can subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you hit it and review. Where were you this weekend, by the way?
I was at Oklahoma Baylor.
Okay, so let's go there, because I believe the biggest, first off, a 99-yard touchdown run, which you don't see very often, but really a lot of the viral stuff centered around Baker Mayfield calling people his daddy or
that
his mommy.
That talks more crap than any quarterback I think I've ever seen. I kind of like it.
I kind of like it too.
This, because he's not like a huge physically imposing dude. It's not like Andrew Luck or Ben Ross. Andrew Luck talking trash would be hilarious too, because he's very geeky and is proud of that.
He'd program trash talking.
Yeah, but Baker Mayfield telling them he's remember who daddy is, and I'm gonna have to spank you, and it's a little. No.
There's something there that I think
what kind of videos he's been watching in his spare time.
He's been hanging out with Dustin. There's something there, I think, that the NFL team, whether it's the video of him dancing or his game at Ohio State, or just this almost enigmatic, magnetic personality that people seem to gravitate to.
Well, there was a play yesterday where he got just planted,
crushed
by one of the Baylor linebackers, and completed the pass, springs up and runs straight at the dude to talk trash to him. Quarterbacks just don't usually do that, and he will do it every chance he gets.
Any takeaways from being there as far as Baylor rule coming obviously out of the darkness?
I think Baylor is going to beat some people as they go on. Rule's a good coach. You knew they were kind of going to straighten things out. So now I do think after this film gets out, Baylor's not going to really surprise anybody. But I did think it was more, learn more about Oklahoma. If you can block Oklahoma, you got a chance to beat Oklahoma.
What was the difference with Oklahoma at Baylor? Obviously, maybe not as up, but the domination in Columbus as opposed to what happened in Baylor.
they got pressure on JT Barrett in Columbus. They got very little pressure on Zach Smith at Baylor. That if you, like I said, if you can block them, you have a chance to beat them because they can't cover very well. If you're harassing the quarterback now and you are forcing the quarterback into making bad throws, their coverage looks a lot better. But if you are forcing them to actually cover, you got a problem. They got a problem.
Back up to with Blackman replacing Francois, and I was on this game because I was betting on it. NC State. Remember, Dorrance, this was a team that was supposed to compete in the ACC. They lose to South Carolina week one. Now they're 3-1.
But that was a weird game against South Carolina.
They completely dominated. Yeah. No, they dominated offensively and defensively, just not special teams. They definitely dominated this game against Florida State.
Absolutely. And James Blackman, you see flashes that maybe down the road he could be pretty good, but he's not ready yet. Unfortunately, he's what Florida State has. So they're going to have to deal with it, and you know, it doesn't really get much easier for them. So this could be a pretty tough season if they can't grow him up pretty quickly.
Not crazy insightful, but he seems young. He's also obviously is very young.
6'5", 170.
He has a very long motion as well. He's very sinewy, right? And he's got a really good arm. He's just got a long motion. Would you say the Florida State fans are red alert right now? Are they freaking?
I would think they are, and they tend to freak at the drop of a hat anyway. And look, Wake Forest is no gimme at this point. Miami's not a gimme. Duke's not a gimme.
No.
Duke's 4-0 too. Then you get Louisville at home. Louisville's got Lamar Jackson. You saw what he did to your defense last year. It's a pretty tough road. Now, I think Florida State will get better as they go. This reminds me a little of last year. The difference is they didn't have the ULM game to kind of break James Blackman in a little bit. They would have played Miami. They might have lost to Miami instead of losing to NC State. Might have lost to Miami and then beaten NC State. But I still think they've got a pretty good defense. Maybe not as good as I thought it was initially, because NC State handled it pretty well. Jalen Samuels, by the way, love that guy.
Yeah, but your guy Derwin was being isolated by the stats nerds with memes and stuff. I guess he was getting toasted in the backfield. The defense itself, it was demoralized. Not necessarily demoralized, but the Alabama game didn't help. But this was domination. NC State was moving the ball. NC State moved the ball against South Carolina that I watched as well. But they were moving the ball at will.
Yeah, so this is going to be an interesting ACC Atlantic race here, because if NC State gets some confidence, we saw how they played Clemson last year, and they get Clemson at home.
By the way, I went through their schedules. We've got two playoff slots to fill, because Clemson's schedule is perfect. Alabama's schedule, now that we saw what happened, you know, with Mississippi State, they look fine. It looks like Alabama and Clemson are kind of over here, and then we're going to fill in with some really good teams those final two spots.
Oh yeah, because you think about it, I like the Big 12 this year. I think, you know, Oklahoma did the conference a huge favor by beating Ohio State. Texas did the conference a huge favor by hanging with USC. I think a one-loss Big 12 champ can get in. Pac-12 is going to be a really interesting one, because I think Washington, if they win the Pac-12, is going to have to be undefeated to get in.
A one-loss Big 10 team.
Because their schedule is really tough.
Exactly, and they don't have a bye, but I was looking at it. One-loss Big 10 team's getting in for sure.
I would think so. And
right?
Man, Penn State-Iowa was fun.
Okay, we're going to get to that. Let's go with a Big 12, which you mentioned. I said we looked for answers, and we found more questions. Did we... you know, OKC, by the way, they don't have a win like Oklahoma has non-conference at Ohio State. So this was a bad loss at home to TCU. But did we find more answers about TCU or questions about OKC? And I call them OKC State? Because, yeah.
Oklahoma State? Because Oklahoma's actually in Metro OKC. Oklahoma State is...
Where are they?
A little out of town.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, where is Stillwater? Where in relation to Oklahoma?
Stillwater's like an hour and a half to the east. And Oklahoma Norman is like 20 minutes south of downtown Oklahoma City.
No excuses. The place was going nuts.
Oh,
perfect setup for Oklahoma State.
TCU was awesome, and people keep throwing out the stats of Gary Patterson teams after a losing season. They're, I believe, now 27-2 in years after a losing season. He's had two losing seasons at TCU, and they've just blown the doors off everybody the following years.
He's like John Thompson too with that towel on the sideline. Yeah. I love. He's got his khakis jacked up to his nipples, and he's got the towel constantly. I love watching him coach. But 14 points off turnovers, Rudolph really couldn't get going.
Yeah, that's how you have to play defense to win in the Big 12. And I thought that would be the way Oklahoma State beat people. And then, of course, the offense. But TCU shut them down in a lot of dropping eight, a lot of rushing three. You know, TCU can slow down a lot of good offenses that way. Now, I don't know if you can necessarily, like, Oklahoma might present a problem for you because Baker Mayfield is just going to sit back there and he will find somebody open. And also they can run the ball pretty effectively with that line and with Trey Sermon. But I don't know. I like the way TCU played. I don't know that they can do that game in, game out, but that is the way you have to play defense to win the Big 12.
And athletically, it didn't look like TCU was behind much. Like, I don't know what happened last year.
Yeah, their offense looked very good. Now, they've had good athletes for a while. Kenny Hill is settling down, and I think Kenny Hill realizes he doesn't have to be a superstar. He just has to keep the ball moving. And I think they looked pretty efficient on offense yesterday. Looked pretty efficient on offense against Arkansas, too.
Playoff chances for Oklahoma State have to be wiped out.
Not wiped out.
Because no non-conference.
If they went out and beat everybody, by a ton, they got a shot. Because that means they'll have beaten Oklahoma possibly twice or they'll get their revenge on TCU. You know, what if you avenge the one loss you had?
But think about this, like with Mason Rudolph. He goes to Pitt and puts up 500 yards in the first half. Next thing you know, he's at the top of the Heisman charts. And now everybody's turning around and just like, you know what? This quarterback class might not be that great. Darnold's turning the ball over. Rosen got his ass beat. And now Mason Rudolph, like, what's happening here?
And Nick Fitzgerald got shut down.
Well, we'll get to that. That was, and I'm sure you got a chance to watch that as well. Okay, so Oklahoma State. I think that's it for the Big 12. Baylor, you know, looked good against Oklahoma. Baylor doesn't matter. The Big 12 would prefer Oklahoma State beat that TCU team, would imagine.
I think they're okay with it. Look, if TCU does the same stuff, TCU gets in.
Place at the table!
Iowa City. Okay, so Michigan with Spate. And this has been a running theme on Place at the Table and also in Ann Arbor and across the state of Michigan and text messages from my friends. Spate was literally not going to be the answer. O'Korn steps in, and that was the difference, 273.
We're talking about in West Lafayette.
Oh, pardon me, West Lafayette. Yeah. By the way, and that was, I had friends that don't gamble. So we'll get to Iowa City next. I have friends that don't gamble, but they went to Purdue. And they were like, 10 is a lock, 10 is a lock. And for the first half, 10 was a lock.
10 looked good, yeah.
10 was a lock.
That wasn't enough, because if you get a lead and then one team starts pushing and you get a pick and all of a sudden it all rolls downhill, 10 was not enough.
Spate got hit late. He got bent over, kind of sandwiched, and O'Korn came in, and he had a touchdown. The red zone efficiency went up. They had two touchdowns when they got in the red zone, which they weren't doing with Spate. And it was almost just like in the second half where I think they outscored them 21-0, somewhere in there, Michigan.
Yeah.
It was just like this wave. Once Harbaugh's boys got going, it was a wave.
They were moving the ball vertically, which is something they haven't done all year. And you move the ball vertically, you open up your running game. There was a picture that Michigan's Twitter feed sent out Sunday morning that showed the hole one of their backs was running through. It was insane. You know, we talk about a hole you could drive a truck through. You really could drive like a Ford Raptor through this hole.
And Ford, good reference for Michigan. O'Korn did look, whether it was getting outside the pocket or whatever, he did look much more efficient. And my friends were like, dude, why wasn't he starting from the beginning of the year?
Well, they tried to play him against Florida, and he wasn't effective. So there must be something in practice that they weren't seeing that they wanted to see. And that happens sometimes. You get quarterbacks who don't practice as well, but just when the lights come on are great. That's why, like Danny Werfel at Florida. Danny Werfel didn't become the starter at Florida till halfway through his redshirt sophomore season because he just wasn't a great practice player. And Terry Dean was. And that just happens sometimes.
As long as they have him, Purdue fans have to be excited about Brohm. He doesn't have to. He uses two quarterbacks. One kid's from Kentucky, where he's from, and then the Blau kid. But they don't. He doesn't have his guys yet to implement into his system. But just his play calling is so creative.
That, and I love the way he gets them to play. I mean, this is a program that had just been so downtrodden. They've been told for years and years that they stink, that they'll never be any good. And he got them to not believe that. And I think that's the hardest part right there. That's harder than any play call you draw up, is to make people believe they can win. And Purdue looked like a team that believed it could win. Now, Michigan was a lot better and ended up winning because they were supposed to win. But Purdue was very respectable.
Hey, we're going to go to Iowa City now, but Staples, check this out. I was just thinking about this. Road wins this weekend. TCU, Washington, Oklahoma, Penn State, Bama, which we'll discuss, and then USC.
Yep.
A lot of important road wins, none more important than under the lights in Iowa City. Trace McSorley off his back foot, a touchdown pass as time expired. That was about as fun as an end of a game can get.
Unbelievable. And my co-host on Sunday mornings on SiriusXM, Tom Luganville, pointed out that maybe a half inch difference on that ball.
Getting over the
and
defenders.
We're talking about something completely different.
The linebacker was reaching up, dude. He's going to be having nightmares about that.
Oh, my goodness. It was but Trace McSorley, you know, you watched him last year and he'd do the baseball swing and all that stuff. And you're like, all right, this guy's a bit of a slinger. Sometimes he throws him into trouble, but. You know, Moorhead's got a good scheme, and say that everybody's scared of Saquon Barkley. But here's the thing. Trace McSorley's legit. That was a play where Saquon Barkley didn't save him. That wasn't, you know, the genius of Joe Moorhead's play call. That was that was Trace McSorley making a play when he absolutely had to. I think that proved more than anything about him. And look, you look at what they have on offense and the scheme they run. That's got to be your favorite offense in the Big Ten. If you're not a fan of Ohio State or Michigan or somebody in the Big Ten, if you're just a casual fan, the Penn State offense has got to be the most fun to watch.
Their tight end has to be their best pass receiver, right, outside of Saquon?
Yes, Gesicki, yes. Yes, he is.
Because
and Saquon's good out of the backfield, too.
Oh, he had over 300, whether it be special teams, receiving the ball out of the backfield, and then a couple of those runs. Saquon, even Zeke Elliott was tweeting about him. Dude's special.
Yeah, he's a freak. You know, if you're doing Heisman watch right now, I would think you'd have him at the top of the list.
McSorley, though, McSorley's a little bit, not necessarily a coming out party in the Rose Bowl, but maybe nationally. I mean, he had started to throw the ball, especially vertically, really well in the second half of the season last year. But McSorley, what is he, 6 foot, maybe?
Well, it's a lot like Baker Mayfield. No, I think he's a little bit taller than Baker. Baker, I think they list Baker at like 6'1 or something, but he's probably 5'11, 6 foot.
Compare him to Manziel. How about that?
It's probably, yeah. Manziel was about 6 foot.
Okay.
Right at six, maybe 6'1. So that makes some sense. But he plays a lot like Baker Mayfield. I think those two have very similar, you know, playing style. I don't think that McSorley talks as much trash, although he might.
McSorley's from the DMV, right? He won a ton of games in high school, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe he's from that area. He's so good. Look, you know I'm not a big Franklin guy, but that feels like a France game to lose.
Whew,
that man is tough, man.
Although, I love the way Iowa played in that game. I was surprised because Iowa has been scoring a lot more this year. They switched offensive coordinators to Brian Ferentz. They don't really call anything different play-wise, but they seem to call it a little – they don't call different plays, but they call them differently, if that makes sense. I thought this was going to be more of a shootout. And Iowa turned it into an Iowa game. And I think that speaks very highly of the Iowa defense. So I would look at Iowa, you know, as a team that – we can think about winning the Big Ten West and maybe making it to Indianapolis and maybe making somebody very miserable there.
This little setup with Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State is clearly why the Big Ten reigns supreme as far as conferences. And then you throw in Iowa into the mix and Wisconsin. I mean, it is not close at this point.
No, it's not. You know, the SEC doesn't look real good right now. The Pac-12 we don't really know about yet. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the Big Ten is the one, and I'm really excited for a month from now when the gauntlet starts, when you have Penn State against Michigan and then Penn State against Ohio State in consecutive weeks.
Who's the best of the three?
I think it's Penn State.
I knew you
were
going to say that.
But here's the thing. If Michigan's offense looks like it did in the fourth quarter of the Purdue game for the next 4 weeks, I might have changed my mind by the time Michigan plays Penn State.
Watch Herb and Ohio State just come through the back door and just, I mean, that's just you know, JT Barrett's back. The defense is back. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
And you know who's rooting hardest for Ohio State out of anybody in the whole country? Everybody in the Big 12.
That's right.
Because either Oklahoma, the team that beat Ohio State, is going to win the Big 12, or the team that beats Oklahoma is going to win the Big 12. And that's going to help. That Ohio State loss to Oklahoma is going to help whoever it is in the Big 12.
Place at the table!
All right, Andy, from the Big Ten, let's go out west here in Los Angeles, Pac-12. So let's start with USC-Cal. I was driving around here in Los Angeles yesterday listening to the USC pregame, and they were freaking out. Obviously, Wilcox with ties.
With good reason.
They were freaking out about playing this game at Cal, where it's not necessarily a football hotbed.
No, I mean, if you looked at the stands, it was not even a Cal home game, really. It was
Wilcox
more of a
scared this
game.
This crew I was listening to on the radio. Wilcox scared them now. Physical team.
I mean, he coached with them, so he knows what they do. We saw them every day in practice. Sam Darnold was the scout team quarterback he had to go against. And also, Justin Wilcox has gotten Cal to play defense.
Tough. It's another interception or maybe two for Darnold. So people are going to pick him apart. 30-20 win, USC over Cal. But again, those are the type of games you have to win coming off that tough game against Texas. I don't look at that as a bad win, as it's being reported to here.
This is what I'm writing for SI.com for tomorrow is conference road wins are hard sometimes. You know, talk about Penn State, Oklahoma, and USC. Sometimes you just got to grind through a game like that because you're going to have them. Any team that wins a championship just about has a conference road game that is just pure misery, and they just have to survive it.
And guess what? Guess what's next? Pullman.
Pullman on a Friday night.
On a Friday. I had Yogi Roth on the show. He was covering Nevada and Pullman. Dude, that guy's a renaissance man, by the way. He was directing a film while we were on the phone. But he was kind of high since Folk got turned around after that tough game against Boise State. Kind of high on Leach's team, who you just visited up in Pullman.
Yep.
U.S., tough little stretch of three games at home against Texas, on the road to Cal, and then you go up to Pullman, to an undefeated team and a ranked team.
Yeah. And if you couldn't block Puna Ford against Texas,
well, here it comes, Hercules.
You're going to have some trouble with Hercules Mata'afa. But also, look, Washington State has some athletes at receiver. They have a bunch of big, long dudes. Leach went down into Florida and found him some receivers. This is going to be a tough game for USC.
Yeah, he's got a couple of guys from Miami.
Palm Beach, actually, Dwyer High School. So, yeah, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing looking for those guys. And Falk has, you know, good – he's played with him for a little while. A lot of that offense is the unspoken communication between the receivers and the quarterback, because basically the receivers are commanded to go find a spot, to go settle in an open spot once they figure out what kind of defense they're playing against. And then it's up to the quarterback to kind of telepathically know where they're going to settle. And so the longer they play together, the more reps they have together, the better they are. And I'm really curious to see these receivers against, because USC's got good players. I mean, Biggie Marshall, and they got athletes.
They're banged up, though.
They are. And Ronald Jones missed the game yesterday. Port Augustine missed the game yesterday. So
good win. Good win for USC. Seriously. They're getting killed here locally.
And Cal, look, Cal's pretty good.
Cal beat North Carolina on the road.
Well, that's not
I But again, you travel across the country, play a Fedora team. I mean, it's still a win.
Well, I think the way they shut down Ole Miss for three quarters in the win against them, that because Ole Miss's offense is good. Ole Miss's defense is not, but Ole Miss's offense is legit. Shea Patterson's a legit quarterback, and they shut them down. So I wouldn't – if I'm USC, I don't feel bad about that at all. I just worry if I'm USC just because – it doesn't seem to get any easier at any point for them. And oh, by the way.
And no bye.
No bye, which I know I bring that up all the time. But, okay, so they play Oregon State after Washington State. They'll win that game. But then they get Utah at home. And Utah just beats the crap out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you win or lose, Utah beats the crap out of you. And then you go to Notre Dame. Have you seen Notre Dame?
Michigan State scored first, I believe, and then Notre Dame just disrespected them the rest of the game. It was 28-7 at half.
Yeah, Notre Dame's pretty good.
Notre Dame's really good. Hey, you mentioned Utah. Can we back up a little bit to Thursday night football? I know you love Whittingham, and I do have to say, you just don't expect the level of athlete that he has defensively flying around. Utah's really good.
Yes. And
at Arizona, of course, we're talking about.
Yeah, now that game probably shouldn't have been that close, but that's, again, you're going to have those games in a season when you're on the road in conference, especially on a weeknight. But, hell, Oregon found out what happens in those games and found it out the hard way against Arizona State. At least Utah got away with a win.
Which we're going to get to. Sticking with the Pac-12 here on Place at the Table. Oh, by the way, Andy Staples for SI.com wrote a piece about Leach that you guys have to check out if he would have ended up coaching down in Key West at a high school. I think it could be a revolving theme within the pieces. Look out for a Nick Saban piece.
Yeah, well, I've done this before. I think it was 2011. I did a story about what if Chris Leak had gained one more yard on one particular play against LSU in 2004.
I remember.
And how would it have changed college football? Because had he gained that 1 yard and gotten that first down, Florida beats LSU. Ron Zook never gets fired. Urban Meyer goes to Notre Dame, and it just spun out from there. It was crazy. I went like 4,000 words. Like that story will make your head explode if you try to read it.
Yeah, SI.com. It's a great piece. Now, when I talked to Yogi, he couldn't stop waxing poetic about a specific coach in the Pac-12 who handled his business on the road. His name's Chris Peterson.
Yes.
Okay, so now I know you better. I want to get your perspective. Dude, he loves this guy. Loves him.
As well he should.
Why? What's up with Peterson in Washington?
They're so maddeningly consistent. All of Chris Peterson's teams are. When he was at Boise State,
look at Boise now.
Exactly. He just gets them to play a certain. So he and Nick Saban have this thing in common, where and I think this is Nick Saban's best quality that hardly anybody ever talks about, and it's definitely Chris Peterson's best quality too. He gets a bunch of 18 to 22 year olds to perform consistently, time and time again. Do you know how hard that is? That's what Chris Peterson's magic is. It's not trick plays or anything like that. He goes and finds guys that fit what he does. And he's a great eye for talent. And then he gets them to perform the same way every single time.
And you're echoing what Yogi said, by the way. The consistency, the character of the dude. He compared him, and he said, you look at him demonstratively on the sideline, they're different. But he compared him to Carroll. I don't know what that meant, but he was just, because obviously Yogi has close ties to Carroll. But there's always a message, there's always a theme, and there's always, you keep him on track.
And Carroll always knew exactly what he wanted personnel-wise. He had a very specific eye for every position. He knew exactly what he wanted there.
Like recruited also, specifically, you mean?
Yes, which is also similar to Saban in terms of physical makeup and mindset. It's like, this is a Nick Saban linebacker. This is a Chris Peterson corner. You know, you just know what you're going to get from that type of person. And you know what they're going to look like, and you know how they're going to play.
I guess we were expecting a dip from the Washington defense, but really,
got Azeem Victor back.
Hasn't materialized, right?
Jimmy Lake is a great secondary coach, and yes, they did lose three really good players from that secondary, but they've had guys in the pipeline who could come in and replace them, you know. And then Taylor Rapp last season was really good as a true freshman, so that was not going to be a problem. And when you have Greg Gaines and Vita Vea up front, and then you have Azeem Victor, who just he obliterated Montez at one point last night. I felt so bad for the guy because Victor comes flying in on one of those delayed blitzes, and it was like Montez never ever saw the truck that hit him.
Okay, so speaking of a truck, we'll get into it in that buyout life, but Jim Mora, so Stanford coming off a couple of losses, UCLA, they were 6.5, almost 7-point dogs at Stanford, get beat 58-34. Love ran all over, 263 on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's just mistakes, penalties, Mora freaking out. Feels like the same I've seen for 3 years with this UCLA
team.
Exactly.
That's the thing. It's not, nothing's changing. And they changed the offensive staff around. And yeah, the offense does look better, but when you can't stop anybody. Now, Stanford went to KJ Costello finally, and I think that's probably going to be the end of the quarterback roulette at Stanford.
Chris got injured, I believe. He was walking off with a concussion, I believe.
Right, but then they tried Ryan Burns, and Costello has been the one that they look at as the future of the program, but for whatever reason, they just haven't wanted to go to him.
Right.
Well, I think now that they've had to go to him, it may be a case like at Georgia where the guy's not giving it back.
Yeah, he threw a couple touchdown passes, 13 and 19 on the other side. 60 attempts for Rosen. Another crazy. Two picks, three touchdowns. But, I mean, you're throwing the ball 60 times.
Yeah. Well, no, his defense puts him in a fairly impossible position. They can't even run a normal offense because they're just trying to keep pace where they're, when they're giving up 50-something points.
You mentioned it, so let's do it. Arizona State, this is unbelievable. Arizona State and that buyout life, we'll have to talk about Mr. Graham. But Oregon, who had been almost under the radar, just putting up points and Taggart his system, and next thing you know, they go down to Arizona State and get beat. Crazy game, by the way.
Oregon still does not have a lot of really good players on its defense. That didn't change overnight. That didn't change with Jim Leavitt getting hired to be the defensive coordinator. They still don't have the personnel to stop really good offenses. Now, nobody thought Arizona State was a really good offense, but Oregon, a team that young on that side of the ball, if you show up not ready to play, you can get beat by anybody. I don't worry about Oregon scoring, and look, they scored 35 points. You score 35 points, that should be enough to win.
Herbert had, what, three touchdowns and Freeman?
Herbert's legit.
He's very fun to watch.
He made one throw last night, and you're just like, whoa.
He's fun to watch. But think about what they've lost over the years, especially up front defensively. I mean, just studs in the round. So,
but there isn't that. There's no Eric Armstead or DeForest Buckner.
Solomon
Thomas.
Don't
have that.
Oh, yeah, I just went to Stanford.
Yeah. You're just thinking of the 49ers.
I'm just thinking
right
that
now.
Is their D line, by the way. Yeah. It's all Oregon and Stanford.
It's all Pac-12. But yeah, no, that they don't have that right now at Oregon, and they're just gonna have to recruit it. And Willie Tiger knows what he's looking for, but it's gonna take a little time.
Yeah, the first year is always tricky. Okay, so that's Pac-12. We'll touch on it a little bit more with that buyout life, but let's head to the SEC.
Place at the table!
I had a dude call me and say, why are you pumping up Brom? Look what Mason's done at Vanderbilt. And I said, call me on Monday.
Oh, is he going? I hope he calls you on Monday.
I said, call me on Monday. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Mason and essentially an Ivy League school.
And I like Derek Mason, but That was what you see when an elite team flexes.
What was that? As far as obviously the Vandy kids were saying, we want Bama. Let's look at it.
Never say no. Only Clemson's allowed to say that.
But let's take a look from Saban's perspective. 59-0. I mean, they kneeled late, so it's not like. But
they weren't even trying. They were trying to keep the score down.
Backup quarterback in. It's not like they were trying to run anything up. But is this one of those games where? Against a team that's undefeated, is this a statement for Saban? He's always got a game within the game.
Yes.
So I wonder what this meant to him in a teaching moment.
This is people are not respecting you the way they should respect you. And you heard that from the Alabama players after the game. I saw Jalen Hurts get interviewed, and he said, look, we're Alabama. You should respect us. And so some of the comments by the Vandy players just – did not sit right with the Alabama players. And we knew Vandy was going to struggle to move the ball on them. But I didn't think Alabama would be able to push them around Alabama's offense versus Vandy's defense. I didn't think it would be that easy for Alabama. But they made it look incredibly easy, which I got to be honest. If they're going to be able to do that, I don't know that there's anybody in the SEC that has a chance against them.
All right, we have to have an intervention before you do another 400,000 think piece on Ed Orgeron. Babers, not Barbers, and Syracuse, they're going to put up points offensively. They didn't in the first half. That was a low-scoring first half. But watched this game, focused on it in the second half.
Yeah, that was pretty ugly.
And, it's just two teams that look pretty evenly matched, frankly.
Yes, it did. And like Marcus Spears, who's a former LSU star, he works for the SEC Network. He's been telling people LSU's a mediocre team. You need to accept this. And ooh, the LSU fans are mad about that. But if you watch them the last couple weeks, it sounds like he's right. I don't see anything special about this. And did we really underappreciate Nathan Peterman at Pittsburgh that much running Matt Canada's offense? Because this doesn't look anything like that offense.
Yeah, Etling's not going to get – I think he was pulled.
He got pulled for Miles Brennan, and Brennan led them down for a quick touchdown, and you thought, okay, maybe this kid's going to do it. Because there was one play where, you know, he's under pressure, he sees the hot guy, hits him, and they go, you know, they gain a bunch of yards on that play, score fairly easily that drive. You think, okay, this is going to be better. It was not any better the rest of the game, and they had to hang on and win. LSU can't block. That's one of the biggest things right now, is they just cannot get a push up front.
And, whether it was a decision made, Babers looked like he was freaking at his special teams coordinator. They're down like four. It's not that late. They still have time, and I don't know if it was a pure onside or a pooch or whatever it was, but they gave LSU tremendous scoring position. Mm-hmm. LSU turned around and scored. I'm saying this was, if I had Syracuse on the money line, which is probably crazy, I'm pissed because in the second half watching, I feel like I have a legit shot.
Yes. It went from 28-10 to 28-26. At 28-26, I was assuming Syracuse was going to win the game, because they had all the momentum, and that gave the momentum back to LSU.
It was, look, maybe it comes down to, I think Geis had under 20 yards rushing.
Now he was hurt.
He was hurt, but again, they weren't.
He stopped playing in the second quarter.
They ran the ball for, I guess Williams had 92.
Yeah, he was all right. I mean, look, they've got to get better up front, or they're going to have a lot of problems against the teams they have to play.
I was just thinking, though. Think about this. I have no clue. We always talk about the progressive offense, whether it's, I don't know, Brohm or Babers. I'm thinking, if you gave LSU fans a chance, do you switch head coaches in that game? Moving now, I wrote that down to ask you, because
I think they would take it.
They probably don't know who Babers is, but
they're pretty football savvy. I think they know who Babers is.
But just meaning moving forward. I'm not talking about like literally just next 5 years. You got a guy to implement a scheme and a system. I think you're going, all right, this is more of a continuation of Les Miles, what we have right now. Bring in better coordinators, as you've mentioned, but still, it's just like cloud of dust.
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't even look like they're running Matt Canada's offense, because I guess they can't, because they can't block it, or Etling can't manage it. I don't know. But they're not running what we saw at Pittsburgh last year. That's not the same offense, or it's a truncated version of it, because they can't run it.
We now move on to our favorite city across college. That's Athens and Georgia, Mississippi State. 31-3 beatdown, specifically on defense. Look, the Mississippi State offense couldn't get anything going like beyond 5 yards.
Yeah. And I told you that the kryptonite for the Dan Mullen offense was always the Alabama defense. And Kirby Smart ran the Alabama defense for a long time. So watch out for that. But I didn't think it would be like that. I thought they'd score a little bit, but man, that Georgia defense is, I think it is playing a little bit out of its shoes. I mean, they're good, but they're playing like Alabama's defense plays.
By the way, I don't have the numbers, probably didn't attempt 15 passes.
Will check. They definitely set the tone early.
Fromm was 9 to 12.
Okay. Yeah, they set the tone early with the flea flicker, and their defense was playing so well, and they just played ball control and let Chubb and Michelle take it and eat up clock and yards.
And Swift was going nuts, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that was – Fitzgerald couldn't do anything. Fitzgerald couldn't get the edge either when he was running. Because you talk about his speed, and that must be a Georgia speed thing on defense as well.
Georgia's very fast on defense, and that's the part – I don't think a lot of people realize is how much talent was there on defense when Mark Richt left. He didn't leave them much in the way of offensive linemen. Now, they had the running backs, of course, but they weren't great at receiver. didn't know what Eason was going to be at quarterback. But defensively, they had dudes across the board. Now, they weren't – they're not super deep like Alabama. They don't go three deep at every position. But the starters can hang with anybody.
They were fun to watch, too. It's just fun to watch a game in Athens at night. Mississippi State coming in undefeated with a big win over LSU, and it was domination, dude. I mean, the last 6 minutes of the games were completely mute. Like, there wasn't even – Mullen was waving the flag at that point.
Well, yeah, there's nothing – the other thing is these aren't necessarily fast-paced offenses. You know, Mississippi State does not run a lot of up-tempo offense. So –
They couldn't stretch anything. And maybe it's just not me. I'm sure you didn't underrate them, but maybe it's just Georgia's defense. What struck me was the speed, as I mentioned. They're flying all over.
And then one other thing about Georgia. How much better is that Notre Dame win looking now?
It looks great. Notre Dame struggled early with BC, ends up beating them. Michigan State, they go to Lansing, East Lansing, and crush them. Notre Dame could be good.
Right, and if so, then that win for Georgia just gets better and better as the season goes on. And Georgia goes to Tennessee. I thought Kirby Smart made a really good point last night, though, in his press conference. He said, I know you guys are going to want to talk about how we're the best team in the East and the best thing since sliced bread and the challenger to Alabama and all that. But we have to do this week the same thing Mississippi State had to do last week, and look what happened to Mississippi State.
By the way, can we talk about an issue in the SEC?
That there are a lot of not good teams?
It's called the East.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Florida last night late.
I did.
Beat Kentucky 28-27.
The look on Mark Stoops' face as he tried to, in vain, to call timeout.
It was unbelievable.
They only had 10 guys out there. And then looking after the touchdown, he looks back at everyone on the sideline, like, I'm disgusted with all of you.
Well, the Stoops,
every single one of you.
The Stoops family collectively kind of has that look.
And the two members of the Stoops family that were coaching last night had that look most of the night.
Florida beat Kentucky late, 28-27. Missouri is that. Maybe needs to be a 30-for-30. They're losing two games at home by 50 points. Unbelievable.
And then Barry Odom goes off like,
yeah,
it's going to get better.
We're going to win.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're dude. Not. Not like that.
And then South Carolina, the Gamecocks. Now, I'm not saying Louisiana Tech's bad. Maybe I don't know a ton about them. I'm just saying this is my alum. Watched this game. South Carolina needed a miracle late with a field goal and a reception that was nuts. But again, the SEC East, Vandy's time to step up, anchor back. It was just, dude, the SEC East and maybe the SEC in general.
How about Tennessee?
Oh, please.
Beating UMass 17-13.
I'm saving it for that buyout life.
Oh, yeah, please, let's.
Place at the table!
When you hear the drum line, it means I'm just looking for something to play here on Place at the Table. And then we fill in the blanks. But it's time for that buyout life. Coaches could be in trouble. First off, does it change anything with Graham at Arizona State?
No, they're still on the path toward him being out of there. They still lost to Houston, they lost to Texas Tech and they lost to San Diego State. Now, it may turn out that San Diego State's great, but still. Okay. I don't see them making noise in the Pac-12 South.
Okay, but Butch Jones, lifeless effort against UMass.
Oh,
they get Georgia
so bad
next week, which we'll preview coming up, but that is a tough
spot. They have to win this game to stay in the SEC East race. If they lose it, they're out. I don't see how it happens. Now, maybe Kirby Smart's right. Maybe Georgia reads his press clippings too much. Maybe Tennessee was just sandbagging, and they come out and are just a completely different team. But I just, after seeing Tennessee in person last week and seeing what they didn't do against UMass, I cannot imagine them beating Georgia.
Does that mean he's done?
I don't know that it means he's done. I know they don't want to fire him, at least the administration doesn't. But if they lose to Georgia and then they lost to, say, South Carolina, Kentucky, or Vandy, any one of those, I just don't see how the fan base, because the fan base is totally checked out on him anyway. I think you're going to start losing money, people, at that point.
By the way, we don't want dudes to get fired, lose their jobs, ruin
their
families.
No, but it's part of the deal.
It's part of what college athletics is about. They're handsomely paid. Let's move on to another dude. Two guys, two Arizona schools. Rich Rodriguez, poor guy. Where's Josh Groban when you need him? Where's Josh Groban?
That's right.
I'll
we need to raise him
up.
You raise me up. That's right.
That was the most unreal scene ever. At like a banquet, or where was it?
It was the Michigan football banquet.
Everybody lock arms, and he started singing Groban.
Oh, that's like it's not quite the same as when Steve Spurrier brought in the boombox and played the Leanne Womack song, "I Hope You Dance," for his Florida team. The difference was that Florida team was good. So
yeah,
you can kind of get away with it. But the Michigan thing with the Groban, and then Groban clowning him
is unbelievable.
Immediately after that. So yeah, I don't know. I thought they put up a good fight, but against Utah, but I just can't see them. I can't see them pulling it out either.
Look, people may not care in Los Angeles as much as they care about USC, but there is no chance Jim Mora, especially with a marquee quarterback, attention this year, and he's had quarterbacks, as we know, he's had defenses, he's had players. There's just absolutely no chance that program moves on with him next year.
I can't see it. I had a caller on my show Sunday morning saying, you know, should they fire Tom Bradley, the defense coordinator? I'm like, it's too late to fire coordinators now. Especially the coordinator who works on the side of the ball that the head coach works on. And it doesn't get any easier with Colorado coming to town. So, I can't imagine. Listen to this closing kick, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon at Washington at Utah, Arizona State at USC, Cal.
Yikes.
It's brutal.
Had a chance with a down Stanford team, get beat. After the miraculous comeback, I mean, it's not going well.
Well, and Texas A&M, we can just move on to Texas A&M at this point. They're not good either.
No.
Okay.
Arkansas is not good.
Neither Texas A&M nor Arkansas could stop anyone. If Arkansas had pulled that game out, I think they probably would have fired Kevin Sumlin today. So, I mean, I think they've already sort of made up their minds at A&M, and the only thing that's going to change is it's just a miracle run through the SEC, which I just don't see happening. Now, I can see them beating South Carolina this week, but beyond that, it's going to be a struggle.
That buyout life here on Place at the Table. You know what we're going to do? We're going to push it back. We're going to be doing staples lists, and coming up midweek, we're going to go through the Big Ten stadiums and cities that he's been to. But right now, here on Place at the Table,
name a city and Andy has eaten there. Choose a restaurant and he'll break it down better than a cover 2 defense. Let's find out what's good.
What's good? Andy Staples, SI.com, of course. A connoisseur of many things in life, including food. And so we ask him, you were at Baylor, I believe, Waco. Yes, Waco. What's good?
That's right. There's a lot of good eating in Waco now, and this is a relatively new development. So there's that show Fixer Upper on HGTV.
Yes, sir.
This is my personal favorite HGTV show, and HGTV is basically the screensaver in our house. So watch a lot of Fixer Upper, so I understand where these people are coming from. But so the couple, Chip and Joanna Gaines, they have kind of a shop downtown by these old grain silos where they sell furniture and tchotchkes and stuff, and they also sell cupcakes. The foot traffic on this thing is insane. So all these restaurants have popped up. There's a barbecue truck called Guest Family Barbecue, and it's
Guest
weird
Family Barbecue.
Guest Family Barbecue. So Waco, based on its location, should have fantastic barbecue. It's halfway between Austin and Dallas. It's in a part of Texas where they make great barbecue. But for whatever reason, Waco's never really had a place where you could go get that perfect brisket by the pound, great sausage. They just didn't have that. Well, they do now. Guest Family Barbecue is your spot. They're only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They open at 11. They close when they run out. They typically run out within 2 hours.
Are these boutique pop-up trucks starting to become what's up on campus?
Well, it's easier to afford than a brick and mortar. I mean, you need capital for a brick and mortar location. You can rent space and put a trailer in and at least get yourself off the ground and then move into brick and mortar later. Now, there is a brick and mortar place within probably 300 feet from Guest Family Barbecue. a Mexican joint called Hey Show in Waco, and it just opened 2 weeks ago. It was awesome. And it's college town prices for upscale Mexican.
What'd you eat?
Really good. I had a stew called Barilla. It's like a beef stew that was outstanding. I had this queso fundido with chorizo that was awesome, and a very good jalapeno margarita.
Oh, wow.
And then next door to that place is a place called Pie Peddlers. And there's just every kind of pie you could possibly want, and they'll throw some vanilla ice cream on it. I had a raspberry rhubarb slice and a peach slice, and it was awesome.
Staples, what's your nationality? Because you rolled those R's like a mug.
I've lived in Florida for 30 of my 30, almost 39 years, or 31 of my almost 39 years. So I learned to roll my R's in elementary school.
What's good? Okay, so again, it's called Guess. Make sure I want to get these
Guess,
right.
Guess Family Barbecue.
Okay.
Hey Show in Waco, H-E-C-H-O-N-E-N Waco, and then Pie Peddlers.
That's what's good with Staples. It's Place at the Table podcast. We said every week it's like there's a theme. What are we going to learn? This week we looked for answers. I'm not sure. I know we found out the Oklahoma State train just got empty. The Georgia train got full.
Yep.
Again, you mentioned that that Notre Dame loss may end up, because we always look towards the end of the year, what losses look like, what wins look like. That might be a really good win for Georgia.
Yes.
And the SEC.
And that's one of those that if their playoff committee is trying to debate, that could come out to be a huge game. Sort of like Ohio State-Oklahoma last year was the game that the committee was looking at as, okay, this vaults a team into the playoff.
As far as more answers, Saban, Alabama, anchor down. That was, I guess, kind of what we expected.
Don't talk trash about Alabama.
Don't do it. It's not going to end well.
Unless you have a tiger paw on the side of your helmet, do not say you want Bama.
The Big Ten could get wild.
Yes.
The Big Ten could get wild.
Can't wait.
Bart Staples, you can find him at SI.com. He's going to be dropping his Monday column tomorrow. Embedded will be this podcast, Place at the Table. You can find us on the SiriusXM app. Just go on demand, Place at the Table. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. At PATT Podcast on Twitter. Midweek, we'll be dropping another. And remember, Staples is going to take you around the best part of the country, the Midwest, Big Ten tour with Staples. Talk to you midweek, Staples.
Yes, sir. I'll see you.
It's Andy Staples, Patrick Maher, Place at the Table.